You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 13 May. We've got 10 cent results due 2 p.m. our time this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Sean Dindiri, he's head of trading at L7 Prime. Telco results, Vodacom on Monday, MTN on Tuesday. A bit different because Vodacom was for the year, MTN for the quarter. But I'm interested in his view on the sector, both at five-year highs. We'll chat with Jeffrey Wapnick from Octadeck Investments. Results, they saw an increase in leasing activity, although core vacancies also increased, and their year-by-year too seems to be doing fairly well. We're also chatting with Specialized Credit at Sanlam Alternative Investments, private credit lending, and how South African investors need to find a local solution. Cut and paste isn't going to crack it. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, Bloomberg, NVIDIA CEO joins Trump's China trip as last-minute addition. They picked him up in Alaska. Business Day, Transnet ports hit 15-year high as recovery gains traction. The report's strongest cargo growth since 2011 amid logistics recovery push. Morning markets, US was red, S&P off 0.2%, the Nasdaq 0.9% lower. The East is mostly green. We've got Sydney off 0.2%, Tokyo almost 0.33% higher. Hong Kong is just a couple of points up, 0.02%, and Tencent a little over 0.5% higher. Commodities mixed, gold futures 4,712. Brent is green, $106.52. Platinum is green, 2,128. Palladium, 1,504. Rand, 1,649. Bitcoin, 81,100. And top 40 opening call, green open, but 140 points, 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Sean Dindiri, he's head of trading at L7 Prime. Sean, appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, Vodacom year-end at Monday, MTN was quarter-end Tuesday. Both have had a good couple of years and trading at levels where they were 5 years ago. Your thoughts on the sector, the numbers, the opportunities here? What we certainly are seeing is fintech to a larger degree, data to a lesser degree, the story. Voices going the way of SMS.
100%. First of all, thank you for having me this morning. I think Vodacom and MTN had, since MTN had similar results in terms of how positive they were. We are seeing, good growth on revenue, profits, and dividends. Mm-hmm. Looking at Vodacom, speaking to the financial year, it's been a great year, precisely after they had the adjustment last year, a big payout, let's call it that, which would have affected their balance sheet, but it seems that, they managed to shut that off. You mentioned fintech. I think from a South African perspective, the market seems to be consolidated from a numbers perspective, but we see that the drive into Africa is really boosting the numbers on both Vodacom and MTN, especially if we're looking at the African countries, East Africa, the East African side of things, their banking systems are not as, let's call it, as robust as the South African banking system. Therefore, mobile money is really a big thing, which is a big gap that I see these telco companies are definitely trying to capitalize on.
And is there, I'm looking at the charts here. Vodacom has almost doubled off the 24 lows. MTN's almost tripled off those 2024 lows. Is there opportunity here? Was this really the pricing sort of reflecting opportunity here?
No, I definitely believe that there is opportunity, specifically after I mentioned that, they seem to be consolidated to an extent in South Africa, and their expansion into different regions with the experience in the market, with the tech that they are already ready to provide, there is a lot of upside for a potential investor or trader in that perspective.
And there are, of course, others out there. There's Sol C, there's MTN. I was going to say Blue Label, although maybe less so than they got rid of Sol C. So not MTN, Telkom. We are getting a fair bit of a telco sector on our JSE, which is great for opportunities for investors.
110%. With the way the world is moving, I'm going to just, you know, pivot to the likes of AI and digitalization. It is a positive thing for our boards and our investors locally and abroad as well.
Quick last question. We had US inflation yesterday for April, 3.8%. That's above the 3.7 consensus. Bloomberg called it the war inflation number. Short version is inflation is coming for us all. This is just the beginning of a series of high numbers we're going to see the world over.
No, 100%. I think with inflation, there's definitely a lagged effect. In my view, I do see that inflation will simply rise even more going into the year, as mm-hmm. much as the year of the war goes on. And there's obviously a risk of our interest rates as well starting to be increased. And we're looking like we're going back to 2025, early 2025, mm-hmm. late 2024, if anything doesn't change, hopefully soon.
Yeah. And that gets that is no fun. That is absolutely no fun. We need that war in Iran to resolve and get that oil flowing. We'll leave it there. Shun Dindiri, head of trading, L7 Prime. Appreciate the early morning. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you looking at the telco sector? As I said, we've actually got a bit of a sector sort of bobbling here. Four stocks. Are you looking? Are you investing? Is it a space you like? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Jeffrey Wapnick, CEO, Octodec Investments. Results for the 6 months ending February, revenue was up 2.1%. Distributable income per share up 11.1%. Jeffrey, always appreciate the early morning opportunity to chat. Let's quickly touch disposals, 89 million across 10 different properties. You also announced the Killarney Mall, which is almost 400 million. That's subject to T's and C's. This really is a sense of positioning the portfolio for future growth and opportunity, I imagine, getting rid of non-core and utilizing that cash into maybe year two city.
I think you've summarized it very well. No need to discuss further. it's exactly what it is. I just want to make one comment to this, is that we're really serious about doing this. In the last 18 months, I think the number is 28 properties that we've disposed of. So we've been active in trying mm-hmm. to dispose what is, to a really large extent, difficult property to dispose of. But it does go. I just need a little bit more time. The problem that I think I really have is that the properties that we are selling are small, 5, 10, 15 million rands worth of properties. Which. So I need time. But that's if we start the discussion like that, it's a focus on the negative side of the business, the tail end. And for me, what is more exciting, perhaps, is the positive side. The fact that we have Year to City in mm-hmm. the pipeline, that seems to be, it seems to be good. The pilot is good. We've introduced operationally into the business some new exciting software. Hatfield, we probably one of the few landlords that were 100% let. We've never done this in the 15 years that our fields has been up and running. And good strong contribution coming from the rest of residential. So that's all very positive. I think our next big challenge that's heading for us now is where to go and besides Year to City, where to deploy the capital.
And that's the question, because you've now got a bunch there. You've got Year to City, which is absolutely working. As you say, you're showing strong demand. You've got massive operational success. We've discussed it a couple of times. I mean, there must be good opportunity there to perhaps convert some buildings or find some greenfields.
That's exactly right. Year to City was born out of a desire to help with this thing. What do we do with this, with our tail? It's difficult to sell assets. Mm-hmm. And well, we thought, well, if we can't sell them, well, let's not sell them. Let's keep them, some of them, and convert them into something else. And that's exactly how Year to City was born. I think it's come out to be a lot more than just a way to deal with some of the tail.
Rental income up 5.5%. That's actually a good number, particularly considering our inflation environment. You made the point that like for like was actually 5.7. Rental collections 98.5%. That's a good number. I'm not sure you ever practically get that to 100%. It really was a good 6 months for the business.
I think so. I think if you analyze it and you focus on what we've done in the last few months, I'm excited. It's invigorated me to do more.
And it's very hard, in
a tough operating environment, it's very hard to keep yourself. I can keep myself motivated, but to keep the team motivated, mm-hmm. and just keep a property is I think it's an old game. And to keep everybody in that when there are other industries that on the surface appear to be a lot more sexy, especially if you've got ability, why must you slug it out in property? Let's go into something where there's a bit more give.
I take your point on that, except of course we all need property. Every single one of us right now is in a property. It might be home, it might be a studio, it might be a work environment. You're so good. I mean, it's things like your shopping centres. I mean, yeah, like-for-like rental growth of 7.7. You make the point that, excluding Killarney, and that's a held for sale, you're effectively fully let. I mean, again, these are and that's a strong turnaround from where we were, admittedly, a while back. I mean, pandemic is some time behind us, but I mean, things have picked up markedly.
Yes. But I think our kind of property, in fairness, I think the team have done exceptionally well. I'm very proud of them. But, you know, everybody's chasing these convenient shopping centres.
Mm-hmm.
But we have done particularly well. The work is done for us for the next. We've got to watch it, but the work is, the hard yards are now done.
Yep.
We renovated, we fixed tenant mixes, and now it's just maintaining and not letting it slide.
Office remains a challenge. Vacancy is 22%. Although you did have some, I think it was government exiting towards the end of last calendar year. But I mean, that perhaps is the tough space left for you and your team. Is that office?
Yes. Look, government is becoming increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with government, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Government should put themselves in a place where every landlord is chasing them down to provide them with accommodation. That's the way you lever yourself up. But it's not that way. I don't think all the major players, Dave, we've run away. And we stayed because, I guess, almost we didn't have options, but that may not be true. So that's government, and I don't want to comment further on it, but that represents 50% of our office portfolio. The remaining 50%. Mm-hmm. It's something I just want to spend 2 minutes talking to you about, and that is there's definitely, and this is the last year, an improvement in demand for small office space.
Mm.
Remember, this is not traditional Sandton office blocks.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's not traditional tenants. No, this is quasi retail office/. Retail type space, and there's demand. All of a sudden, there's proper demand. I'll let something slip to you, and I it's small, but it's bigger than most people realize, and that's the beauty industry. You walk mm-hmm. around town and you see what's going on most ladies' heads.
Yeah.
There's something happening, and they these ladies have taken to these office blocks like fish to water.
I get your point. It's quasi retail, but it fits perfectly well. I mean, it absolutely that
can... it fits very well. It's a match made in heaven.
We'll leave it there, Jeffrey Wapnick, CEO, Octodec Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money weather the storms for Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now with Abhishek Amarchand, Head of International Credit and Specialized Credit Strategy at Sanlam Alternative Investments. Abhishek, appreciate the early morning. To set the scene before we dive in, private credit market, do we have any sense of how big it is as a global market these days after what's been, I mean, a fairly significant and steady growth sort of post the, I suppose, the 2008 crisis? What size are we talking?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me. I think distinction to be made really is private credit is currently around $3.5 trillion to $4 trillion is some of the numbers you would see.
Mm-hmm.
But what's more important is the bifurcation in the asset classes where there's more opportunity within private credit. Private credit post the GFC, as you point out, really grew through direct lending.
Mm-hmm.
But today, direct lending, while it's still the largest part, the opportunity set is around things like asset-backed finance. And what does that mean? That means specialty lending, aircraft lending, mortgage lending.
Oh, wow.
So the outlook, if you talk to a certain large asset managers out there, it's a $20 to $30 trillion market going forward.
And in essence, the fact that it's becoming more niche, and niche might be the wrong word I'm using here, but more specialized perhaps is a better word in terms of, as you say, maybe it's aircraft-backed or the like, this materially grows that potential, to your point. It makes it a much larger market. And I imagine a market where we are seeing not only growth, but in terms of spreads reacting to that growth and potentially tightening, benefiting the ultimate users.
Yeah, I think because whenever there's a high growth market, naturally efficiency attracts competition,
mm-hmm.
and that competition then results in a scenario where you have tighter spreads, perhaps maybe even different documentation standards across markets. But I would say what's important is that smarter managers, even though they've branched out or added adjacent strategies, at the core, smarter managers are still being quite selective about the type of credit they invest in, the underwriting discipline, the relationships they manage, and how they build scale. So, yes, the opportunity is growing. Potentially, spreads are coming. Yes, spreads are coming in. But what this would lead to over time, by our belief, is probably a bifurcation between the smarter managers having mm-hmm. better investment outcomes and perhaps maybe more smaller peripheral managers who don't really scale to the level where they need to have long-term success. But we need to see how that plays out over time.
But I get your point around that. And one of the key things is, you know, in debt markets, it's asymmetric returns. Upside is limited, which means it is around that underwriting discipline. Operational sort of depth remains hugely important, always important, but perhaps maybe a little more here. And that's perhaps where the bigger players are going to have some edge.
No, one, I completely agree with you. As you hit the nail on the head by saying asymmetric returns. I mean, maybe for the listeners, is you lend someone 100 million rand,
mm-hmm.
you hope to get your 100 million rand back with interest. And when that 100 million doesn't come back as an investor, that's a can be significant loss related to an equity where you lend into or you can invest in a couple of equities. One does really well, a few does really bad, but overall the returns for your portfolio or your clients are good. So, as you say, in the disciplined underwriting, is that something certainly we do at Sanlam Alternative Investments is to apply caution, apply discipline, focus on risk management. And in our offshore credit strategies where we partner with managers, that's some of the key ingredients that we look for.
And for SA institutions such as yourselves, I mean, it really is a case of building slowly. I mean, there is real opportunity in the emerging market space for the private credit. It's building that capacity and sort of developing it over time. And importantly, perhaps, it's sort of driving our own way, not copy and paste from what we've seen in the developed markets.
No, totally. I think the ingredients that drove private credit in the US and in Europe are different to the opportunity set here. We can take some learnings from there. Whereas, you know, post the GFC, where you had this bank retraction, you had private credit lenders stepping in to fill this void in mid-market companies that were owned by private equity businesses. In emerging markets and on continent, we as a firm have been lending into credit for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have bank retrenchment. You don't have that. And you don't create the funding gap in Africa or in EM sits more in that small emerging market space. And that space is fragmented. As we know, on the continent, the risk, the rules and laws are different, and that needs some reform. So you can't copy paste what's been done offshore into emerging markets. What I would say is that you can learn from the offshore emerging market, from the offshore private credit scenario, where the bank, traditional bank lending model has been disrupted, and but to an extent where today, where the market's grown to where banks, private credit lenders, and even broadly syndicated loan markets, or the public markets, all have a role to play in the greater financing spectrum. But private credit certainly took a bank tool and applied more sophisticated thinking and more nuanced thinking to provide a credit solution to these mid-market companies that were owned by private equity firms that sponsors that banks were not lending to. We should then take that learning and apply it to our own understanding of how we understand the country, because this is the home, and find that middle ground, as opposed to just assuming banks will disappear and institutes will just pop in. We should, it's not much, you can't do it the same way you've done it in the past.
Yeah, I like that, and I take the point absolutely. I think lessons to be learnt, and then we sort of find our own way, but we leave it there. Abhishek Mashanti is a head of international credit and specialised credit strategy, Sanlam Alternative Investments. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Jimmy Moyoha yesterday, talking Boxer results. Pick and Pay valuation. Pick and Pay is effectively minus 10 billion rand. And we asked, which would you be buying? You all liked Boxer. That was absolutely a clear winner. Pick and Pay got little or no love. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.